His interest in Blake is deep and longstanding, including a PhD dissertation written in the History of Consciousness program at the University of California, Santa Cruz, under the supervision of the renowned anthropologist Gregory Bateson. Bateson's father, the biologist William Bateson, was another serious Blake collector and an enthusiast who, among other things, introduced Blake to Jeffrey Keynes. He also passed on to his son an original set of the illustrations of the Book of Job. So there's a long additional genealogy behind Stephen's own commitment to Blake. Since completing his university education, Stephen has developed a career as a musician, a lecturer, and a music software developer. He's in great demand in all of these areas, mixing performance with frequent talks on improvisation, on creativity, and on consciousness to groups ranging from artists to those interested in spirituality to the more creative sectors of the business world. In other words, he is on the road a lot. He also has published the study Free Play, Improvisation in Life and Art, a study of creativity that has influenced and attracted the attention and praise of the likes of Keith Jarrett, of Yehudi Menuhin, and of Robert Persig. In his improvisatory art, Stephen shares Blake's commitment to the use of multiple media, what he calls cross-sensory art forms, in his case, mixing the visual with the musical. Like Blake, he believes that reality cannot be expressed in any language, but that the use of multiple languages and media will allow you to get closer. The real world, he argues, is a totality, and conscious understanding is the small sliver that we can see at any time. Art, like science, is about the revelation of reality. Listen to Bach as he peels back the mathematical structure of the universe and shows how everything is interconnected. He moves through a network of variations like a mathematical proof, winding around and enclosing many dimensions. You can feel and experience the interconnections as the individual self recedes into the background. It follows then that visionary experience is not a manner of seeing weird personages who are not there. It's a matter of seeing systems and how they interconnect. Art as an interface of the consciousness, of the conscious and the unconscious, is a recurring theme in Stephen's work. The intersection of music, dance, theater, and multimedia art provides a rich field for revisiting that theme. Such Blakean thinking informs Stephen's approach to improvisation. Artistic functioning, he says, particularly when the method is improvisation, puts us in conscious contact with the realities of system, such as the continuous feedback and calibration, recursive self-modifying behavior, concurrency, ongoing interactional relationship. In improvisation, these realities are right there for us to see, hear, touch, and play with. One of his earlier pieces of visual music was based on the four Zoas. The piece he will present today explores the universe of Job through the lens of Blake's Job illustrations. Please join me in welcoming Stephen Nachmanovich.
Thank you, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. Is this turned on? Great. That was wonderful. Thank you so much. I also want to thank Karen for the extraordinary work that she has done to put this day together. It has been amazing. And I want to thank Jerry Bentley for many years of exquisite friendship. And I want to thank William Blake for kicking me into the world of being a professional musician and artist. And the encounter that I had with Blake when I was young in the early 1970s, studying with Gregory Bateson, was an encounter that really changed my life. And I felt that Blake talks about the creative process in a way that you have to jump from talking about it to doing it in whatever field we happen to be comfortable in. And I've just kept going in that direction that Blake set me on, even though I've gone to a lot of other places. One of the hallmarks, of course, of Blake's work that I picked up on, I was always interested in synesthesia and the cross-fertilization of art forms and the cross-fertilization of our senses, and in that sense that comes from the mystical traditions that reality that we see is a small sliver of something bigger, and that words cannot get to that something bigger, images cannot get to it, music cannot get to it, science cannot get to it, scholarship cannot get to it, religion cannot get to it, but by making sandwiches of two or more of those languages, then it is possible to get a little bit closer to that reality. And particular form that Blake took in his composite art forms, of course, as we know, combined poetry and painting, but he always talked about the tripartite world of poetry, painting, and music. And we knew that Blake made music, but he did not live in the world of music notation. And so we have no idea what was going on there. And we also have no idea what was going on there between Blake and Mrs. Blake in the world of music. But apparently people who were present at the time knew that that something was going on in all those media. I have been fascinated. There is this tradition of visual music in the West, which goes all the way back to other kinds of mystics besides Blake, to Athanasius Kircher, to a lot of the Christian mystics, the Jewish mystics, composers like Scriabin, people who were creating color music, people who were making all kinds of synesthetic cross-fertilizations between visual art and music, people like John Whitney, who wrote about the complementarity of visual art and music. And now that we have this piece completely ready to go, we are stuck on a screen that says Note Vision, so it would be really nice to have the computer screen happening. Ah. Okay. I love that noise. The wonderful, very good. Oh, that is very good. Okay. So this particular piece came about at the end of 2001. I had just moved from Los Angeles to Charlottesville, Virginia at the end of 2000, and the University of Virginia Art Museum was about to have a Blake exhibition in which they'd put together a great many of his engravings and drawings, black and white works, and there was a complete set of the Job illustrations, and they commissioned me to do a visual music piece which was set at the end of the Job illustrations. And this piece that you're about to see is 11 minutes long, but at that time it ran on a continuous loop for 3 months. And so the piece was composed at the end of 2001, and by composed I mean I put together the multimedia from the pictures and Blake's words and created the music for it and put it all together into a package. The slides from which I took the works I'd actually taken in the early 1970s with the help of Arnold Faucus, who was very, very kind to me and invited me to Paris and helped me photograph every page of all the stuff that he had, you know, these wonderful, wonderful facsimiles and other things that he had and all kinds of Blake materials. And at the time, I was just imagining what it would be like to use some of these slides to create visual music pieces, which at the time were done with pairs of slide projectors with clickers and clackers, rotating the slides around and fading them in and out with music connected with it. And it's a lot easier to do this now. And the Job pictures in particular, when I took those slides that I had made in the early 70s and scanned them into the computer and got them ready for this, they had accumulated, as slides will, innumerable microscopic bits of dirt that had annealed themselves to various places on the slide. And I had to go around with the mouse hundreds and hundreds of times, wiping them out the way you remove pimples from supermodels in Photoshop. So there was a lot of that kind of work going on here. But let me play the piece for you now. It's 11 minutes, and then we can leave some time for discussion afterwards. Thank you. We have a couple minutes for any questions or discussion that people would like to have. It's on the title page. It says William Blake's Illustrations of the Book of Job in two places. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the origins of the music?
Yes, the music was, except for the Japanese temple bell that appeared at the end, all the music was recorded with a single instrument. It was recorded with one electric violin. Played through various filters and overdubbing.
Stephen, thank you. That was wonderful. I wonder, though, what you think of your competitor's music, Ray Vaughan Williams' music for Job, A Master for Dancing.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. I'm not sure that it has anything to do necessarily with Job. Though it's very nice music and I like it. But it's very much, it seems kind of unlinked in a way. But I like his stuff. I like his music a great deal.
And have you ever seen it perform?
I have, yes. I have. Now, when it's linked with dance, it gets a lot closer because the dance, you know, I mean, I've seen performances where the dance, and the pictures are present, and then it gets much more closely linked. Yes.
What's that great font?
The font is called Codex. That's a good question because I looked for a long time to find a font that would be readable on screen, but would still sort of blend with Blake's style.
Very successful.
Thanks. And also to give credit, as you know, all the quotations on there, I mean, it was sort of interesting to me it's interesting to contemplate the Job in relationship to all the other illuminated works. You know, in a sense, the Job was the last illuminated work, and the previous illuminated works were continuous poetry illustrated by pictures, and this, in a sense, was a continuous stream of pictures illustrated by text all around them. And Blake's text was biblical, and my text, there was some Book of Job in there, but most of it was scattered from throughout Blake's life's work, because I really have come to see that the Job was really his summating work, and it was the work in which he really compressed all of the ideas of the four Zoas and Jerusalem and, you know, his soul, his psychology and his mythology and all of that as is present in there in a way. So I kind of very early came to see the Job as a way of opening up into the whole Blakean universe. Now, the two things there that were not Blake or the Bible were the midpoint, plate 11, where he's confronted by this split being of Yahweh and Satan hovering over him, and it says confrontation with the unconscious, and that, of course, is from Carl Jung, and there is a very powerful way in which the work of both Freud and Jung was prefigured a century earlier by Blake. And then earlier on, Piety in the Sky was aligned by my friend Judith Diamondstone, who's an anthropologist and who was very interested in these pictures. Yes?
Yeah, I like to kind of balance it between kind of the sound and at the same time kind of classical kind of quality to it that seemed really appropriate for Blake. But I was wondering if let's say you were given a commission to do the marriage of Evan and Hal, because a lot of that was coming in on the sides.
Right.
Would it be a different sounding? What would you, as you're thinking about, I need to somehow capture the music of the marriage? How would you imagine that?
Wow, that's a fascinating question. Of course, the the best answer to that is, I don't know, because I haven't done it yet. But it's a wonderful idea, because there's a way in which, the Book of Job, as I said, at least in my view, is kind of the most compressed of Blake's works, in that it takes all this material that he'd already synthesized in these huge epics and boiled it down into 21 pictures. And the marriage of heaven and hell is, in a way, is the most overt, prosaic, and open to the public exposition of those same ideas at a much earlier stage. And it was more overtly political and, to use today's word, punchier kind of text. It would be very, very interesting to me. I've never thought about that, but that's a very interesting thing, and it would be very different. It would be very different, and all those embedded stories in the marriage also would be interesting in terms of creating multiple sound universes that are linked within this thing. Yeah. 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 I mean, there's certain things that I would almost do syllable by syllable, whether they were done verbally or non-verbally. But yeah, it's a very, very interesting project, and I got to think about that now. Thank you. I think we have time for one more, and then we should move on. Bzz. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Again, I'd say it's something I'd really have to think about it in order to say something sensible about. But I would connect it with what we were thinking about in Gary's presentation just before this, in terms of the connection between Blake and film, and the notion of movement. Okay, and that Blake was always presenting bodies, but he was always presenting bodies in movement. And because he didn't have access to film or to dance or to, other forms that are in time, so many of these, I'm often, of course, many people are struck by the connection between Blake's illuminated books and the comic book art of today, and that is one of the forms, in addition to film, that you could imagine Blake doing if he were alive today. But the interesting thing also about comic book art is that it presents, these very dynamic, fast movements, but each in a panel of static image of bodies. These flying figures, the recumbent figures, the figure, drooping over the S, and all of that stuff. It all denotes time. And so it's interesting to me as a musician to see those kinds of forms and to try to imagine time weaving around those forms. So I think that's probably it. Let's move on. And thank you so very much.